Hello out there, everyone in the MTG universe. I know it's been a couple of weeks, and it's been a pretty busy couple of weeks, actually, for me. First off, sorry for my absence. I just want to go off the record and say I had strep throat for a little while, and that wasn't too helpful, obviously, in recording. I was pretty sick during that time. And then shortly after that, I managed to go up to GP Oklahoma, and that's what I want to focus today's show on, of course, is GP Oklahoma. And we're going to talk about that here in a minute. If you do follow me on Twitter, you know that I ended up getting my first day two in GP Oklahoma, which I'm excited for. I'm still running off that high of getting day two in GP Oklahoma. My ranking was 298. It's not as high as I would have liked it for my first day two, but again, I can't complain. What I ended up taking to Oklahoma, of course, was Infect. Again, you would know that if you followed me on Twitter. I was relatively surprised on how well the deck did getting to day two. I did see a few other Infect players there, so there were more people out there trying to bring Infect back. I don't know if anyone made it higher than me playing an Infect list, per se. I would hope so, but there's also a part of me that's like, oh man, I hope I did the best with the Infect deck overall. And that's, I think, just like a side note. You always hope that you do the best with your kind of deck. I think we all, as Magic players, kind of feel that way, like our deck is the way that it should go, not this variant, not that variant. And so that, I guess, is kind of my mindset when you look at it in the long run. Of course, as soon as I got back from GP Oklahoma, it was finals time for my college, so I kind of hardcore focused into my studies because I was just at GP Oklahoma, didn't really have time to study, slash there was an opportunity, but I was at GP Oklahoma. I didn't have the mindset at that given time to do it. But upon coming back, I did pull like a full dive into my studies. I spent like days in the library. I managed to do really well in my finals, so that's something I'm rather excited for. So now we're here at this week, again, getting back into the swing of things. I know everyone's doing Christmas things with your families, and you might not necessarily have time to do as much as you want to. So hopefully this program, at least today, will substitute for just a little bit of your magic craving over the holidays. As I mentioned before, I went up to GP Oklahoma. I went up there with three really good friends of mine, Ethan, Katie, and my friend Matt. All three of us had a fantastic time. We found some restaurants relatively close by. Oklahoma, I've never been up there before, but it's a wonderful city to just travel around. So in my car, the four decks that we ended up taking to Oklahoma were Black Green Tron, we had a Mono White Prison deck, my Infect deck, and Blue Red Storm. Now, it's unfortunate that not everyone in our car managed to make day two, but everyone did have a great time. Myself and Mac did manage to make day two. Mac placed higher than me. I think he got pro points and borderline money bracket. I'm not 100% on that. I'd have to double check the rankings, but I want to say he did get a pro point. I did not get a pro point. I got knocked out roughly around 13, if I'm remembering correctly, and that was from the money bracket. And then for whatever reason, my luck just decided to give out there round 13, and I lost the next two rounds, one of which I shouldn't have lost, but you can't always win everything. So I did not get a pro point. I did not get into the money bracket, but now since I've made my first day two, it is now my goal to officially get into the money bracket, get on camera, get into the top eight, and slowly move up into that pro territory ladder. So I kind of want to touch on GP Oklahoma's first top eight list. I think that's where most of the focus was, of course, for GP Oklahoma. And surprisingly enough, I didn't see a lot of these decks flying around. In order from first place to eighth place, we have two Scapeshift decks sharing first and second place, and we have a Black-Green Tron list, a Dredge list, two Living Endless, and two Mono Green Tron lists. So of course you're seeing a lot of doubles there, which I think is the more surprising part. Now when it comes to the overall tournament, even though I was riding with somebody who was playing a Black Green Tron list, which ironically enough was fairly similar to the Black Green Tron list that took first place, I only saw one Tron game against myself, period. The Tron player said he didn't even see Tron, the Storm player didn't play against Tron, our Prison deck player didn't play against Tron. No one saw any other Tron decks pop up or whatsoever. That was the weird thing about it. I know Scapeshift was there. I played against a couple of Scapeshift decks. Dredge was there. The Living End decks kind of surprised me that Living End is making that big of a comeback. But at the same token, I'm kind of glad because I have all the cards already for that deck. So it's no skin off my bones, per se. Ironically enough, I have a really good matchup against all these decks as Infect. And it's a shame that my Infect deck didn't make it to the top because I feel as though I would be able to put up a fairly decent fight against these top 8 decks, partially because I'm faster and in theory I win on turn 3, turn 2, and these decks don't go off that quickly. Black Green Tron does have Fatal Push, but I'm not too worried about that. Dredge has a couple of removal pieces, I'm not too worried about that. Living End, even though they cycle a bunch, I don't remember removal pieces being in the deck, outside of Shriek Maw and a couple other cycling cards and stuff. Tron, of course, does have quite a bit of removal, as does Scapeshift. I think they run 3 Bolts main, and depending on the deck, they're running Sweltering Sun or Anger of the Gods. And then Tron, of course, as a whole. I mentioned Fatal Push earlier, but they're also running Oblivion Stone, they're running Karn, they're running Ugin. But as Infect, I feel fairly confident that I outrun these decks 9 times out of 10. If I'm on the play, they're required to have the removal to deal with my Infect creatures right then and there. And more often than not, they're not going to have that removal. I think the Black-Green Tron deck runs 3 of Fatal Push. Most Scapeshift decks run 3 Lightning Bolt. And they're running maybe 2 Sweltering Suns or 2 Anger's Main. And that's still, 5 answers, but they're shuffling their deck constantly. Possibly shuffling away their answers. Tron, you're going to have Oblivion Stones, at least in the mono green variant, and I'm not too worried about that. And then, of course, Shriek Maw and other removal spells in Living End, that usually happens on turn 3. They might be able to go off turn 2 if they exile fast mana from their hand, but at that same token, it's a very difficult situation for them, I believe, to deal with Infect, because yes, my board is wiped, but unless they have a flyer out, I can just pump up my Ink Moth Nexus and kill them, or I could play a creature, take some damage, and then just make that creature unblockable next turn and kill them. So they're constantly requiring to Living End me to death. But perhaps that's just my overall thought. I feel that Infect's in a fairly decent position right now, and if it gets another piece, I feel like the deck can make a strong comeback. And I'm going to let you guys go over my list. It's a very similar list to some top 8 lists that have topped 8 before, when Infect made that brief comeback. But I made it my own. I adjusted for sideboard purposes, and perhaps I went a bit too specific on things, but overall I felt as though it was a strong sideboard choice. So what I first want to touch on is my day one with decks I played against, how did day one go, and then of course I want to touch on day two. So day one, the first deck I played against was 5 Color Humans. I've mentioned it on the show before, I'm not a fan of 5 Color Humans, I don't think that deck should exist. I think it's a solid tier 1.5, tier 2 deck, and yes, it's going to get some people here and there, but I'm really opposed to this deck existing. It doesn't have very much interaction. It is an aggro deck, but it doesn't have much in the form of removal when it comes to creatures, and that's its really big downside against Infect. Is I see a 5-color humans deck, I know they don't have removal, I could just focus pumping up one creature and kill them. Their only threat against me is a Thalia, and yes, it's going to make my pump spells cost one more, but usually, whenever I play against a 5-color humans deck, for whatever reason, I'm going to go in for a swing, and I have 2 open mana. The 5-color humans player always decides to block with Thalia. I think that's a fairly large mistake, because now I'm going to spend my 2 mana to pump up my creature and kill your Thalia and make my spells cost one less. To me, that's just a win-win scenario. I don't mind 2-for-1-ing myself in that given state, because now the one threat you had against my deck is now dead. It's just a very good situation overall for me. After I get past the Thalia, really the only threat in the deck to me is probably Reflector Mage, and that's more or less just an annoyance, because if they keep dropping Reflector Mage and bounce my creatures and I don't have hexproof stuff in my hand, or they have a Thalia out on the field and they make my hexproof spells cost 2 more, then it starts to become a little annoying. But other than that, I would say my win percentage against 5-color humans is around 85%. Every now and then, the 5-color humans deck will surprise me and they'll run either Path to Exile or they'll run Dismember in the sideboard or maybe in the main, but for the most part, I know the deck does not run removal, and at least in the form of spells. They're strictly ETB creature removal. They're going to run Fiend Hunter, they're going to run Fulminator Mage, so on and so forth. Stuff that I really don't have to worry about. First round against 5-color humans, I won 2-0, so I was fairly happy with that win, knowing that 5-color humans is a really good matchup for me. The next matchup, unfortunately, was not that great. It was Jeskai Control. Now, the Jeskai Control player was a fairly good player. He knew what he was doing. Against Infect, it's, like I mentioned before, it's not a very good matchup for me. I think if I don't get the die roll, my chances of winning become real slim. It's just a very good tempo deck, especially to deal with Infect. I did manage to win one game against the Jeskai Control player, but they ended up winning that round, so I lost 2-1. I wasn't too discouraged at the time. I was 1-1, and it was only round 2. Overall, I was still feeling fairly decent, fairly confident in the deck. Going into round 3, I lost in 2 to a blue-white control deck. Now, blue-white control, you think wouldn't have that very good of a matchup against me, but unfortunately it does. The fact of the matter is they're always going to have the pass in hand, or they're going to have the counter spells or the spell snares, whatever they need to, just to say, in fact, you're not going to do anything, you're not going to kill me. And they do, most of the time. I did lose to the blue-white control player, as mentioned, in 2, and it just wasn't a good matchup. It's one of the worst matchups for an Infect deck in this current state. I don't know what necessarily the problem is, because without Path, more than often, you think the deck would deal a lot of damage on turn 2 or be able to hold out, but they're running Paths on turn 1, Wall of Omens turn 2 or Spreading Seas. They're running Detention Sphere on turn 3. They could also Snapcaster Mage, Flashback a Path on turn 3. That's always a given option. Turn 4 is Cryptic Command or it's Supreme Verdict. One of the two. Some of the decks also run Sphinx's Revelation. I really don't care about that card, but once they start drawing a lot more cards, it becomes bothersome. And then, of course, their main win condition is, depending on the deck, you're either going to see Geist of Saint Trapped or you're going to see Celestial Colonnades, both of which become a problem when you're starting to take a lot of beats to the face. The decks do also run Gideons, and because they run Gideon on 3, if I don't have a Spell Snare, now I have to focus and spend all my time killing this Gideon. Or they're going to have 5-drop Gideon, and now I have to kill 5-drop Gideon because they redirect all my creatures to 5-drop Gideon. Or they're going to have Jace, and Jace is going to plus 1 and make all my creatures -0, -1 for the turn. And that becomes a bit of a problem. So the deck in a whole is just one big problem for Infect. I can get by blue-white control if they do not have the path on turn 1. But if they do not have the path on turn 1, then that roughly means that they kept a really bad hand, or they kept a greedy hand, because they do need to keep a path for that turn 1 answer against Infect or any other aggressive deck. I do wish I didn't get paired up against the blue-white control player round 3. That left me feeling kind of like I made a bad choice for the weekend. But you can't control who you play against. And ultimately, it does give you experience against the deck. It gives you a better mindset of what you need to do when you play against that deck later. I'm happy that I did get to go up against blue-white control in the long run, because no one in my area really plays blue-white control except one person, Mac. He does play blue-white control every now and then, but it's just one of those decks that I think I need more experience going around playing, and I was happy to play against blue-white control ultimately. Now, going into round 4, I'm feeling kind of bad, and now I go up against a mono-white artifacts deck. That's the best way to describe this deck, because I have no idea how to describe this deck otherwise, that it's mono-white artifacts. The goal of this deck was to put out as many artifacts as possible that are not Memnites and Ornithopters, then drop Tempered Steel and swing for the win. You think I would have a good matchup against this deck, but I lost in 2. They were running Blessed Alliance and Path, which Blessed Alliance is the more troublesome of the cards, for sure, rather than Path per se, but even then, that wasn't the big issue. I lost in 2 against the mono-white Tempered Steel deck or the mono-white Artifacts deck, whatever you want to call it, because I drew nothing but lands. Legitimately, I drew 10 lands 2 games in a row. I had a opening hand of creature plus 2 lands or 3 lands and then the rest of them spells. That seems like a really good hand for Infect to keep. But then I would draw nothing but lands after that. And I'm not talking, oh, Ink Moth Nexus is at least good. I wouldn't even draw Ink Moth Nexus. I would just have the one creature, a few pump spells, 3 lands, and then draw into 10 more lands and lose the game. So it wasn't a very good game of Magic for me. I believe solidly that it is one of the matchups that I should have won, and I should have been 2-2 at this point. But them's the breaks, unfortunately. At this point, I head over to the nearest vendor and I buy a new set of sleeves. I will admit, I am a superstitious person when it comes to Magic. I don't have like a routine I do, but if I lose 3 games in a row and I get cluster after cluster in games, yes, I know that's variance, but I'm going to go and buy a new set of sleeves and re-sleeve. And that's exactly what I did. Now, a lot of players would be discouraged at this point, being 1-3. I know I was, but I still wanted to to play, and I didn't want to, you know, let the day have the best of me. At this point, I won the next five games. I won against Blue Black Mill, I won against Abzan Tokens, I won against Burn, I won against Affinity, and I won against Five Color Humans. So I think, obviously, the decks that I played against gave me favor, and I'll go into that in a little bit there, but overall, I do think the sleeves had a little something extra to do with it. I didn't see as many land clumps as I did earlier, and for the most part, I won out my matches in two, or if I lost one of the matches, I still managed to make a comeback, which was fantastic for me. I will say the one matchup I did have the most problems with in those five was the burn matchup. Obviously, the burn matchup isn't the best for Infect. Again, it's a lot of spot removal, and now I'm losing more life upon what I was already losing, but my sideboard has a pretty good structure against Burn, and we'll get into my sideboard here in a minute. But I do worry when I go up against Burn, because obviously it's favored against me with Burn. I think it's like a 30% chance of me winning game one, and then depending on what I board in, it jumps up to like 45%, so it's still not that great. But overall, I'm still excited that I beat the Burn deck. And again, Affinity, I think Infect has a favorable matchup against Affinity, especially with how my board is structured. So I think with how my board is structured, I think I'm like 60-65% against Affinity. And then Five Color Humans, again, I won that in two. That's just almost a give-me game with Infect. The Abzan Tokens list, I didn't expect to see an Abzan token list at all. It was rather surprising. They were running Gideons, they were running Spectral Processions, they were running anything and everything that gave them tokens in green and white and black. They were having Thoughtseize Inquisitions, they were having Anointed Processions to double their tokens, Nissas to pump up their tokens, everything to make their tokens better. But it just wasn't enough, and I was able to outrun them fairly quickly. But ultimately, that is the game for day one. After day one, I'm sitting 6-3, and I get into day two on 18 points. Now, that left me feeling fairly excited. I know I'm on the bubble for making money, and I'll be on the bubble for quite some time, but it's still rather exciting to make your first day two at 6-3. Now, going into day two, if I remembered correctly, the first matchup I go against is Scapeshift. It's a win for me. I beat the Scapeshift deck in two. So I'm now 7-3. I'm feeling fairly confident. The next matchup I immediately play against is another blue-white control deck, and unfortunately, I lose in two. I did keep a very good hands. I kept hands with two creatures or three creatures, depending on it, or two creatures and Ink Moth and going into other things, and I was able to get them consistently to 8-9 infect, but I'd always be one shy of just killing them, which was the bad part. I did the math constantly in my head, and for whatever reason, I'd always be one or two shy, and then they'd immediately kill me next turn or deal with my infect creatures accordingly. I think at one point he went path, spreading seas, and just dealt with my Noble Hierarch, and dealt with my Blighted Agent, and dealt with my Ink Moth Nexus all in one turn, which was really upsetting, because if he didn't do that, I had him dead. And it's unfortunate that it went that way, but I dropped down to 7-4. I then went against a Mono Green Tron deck for the next round, and I beat the Mono Green Tron deck in two. Mono Green Tron as a whole doesn't have a lot of answers against Infect. Some of the decks run Walking Ballista, and of course they're going to run Oblivion Stone, they're going to run Karn, they're going to run Ugin. Those are all valid threats, but they go slow enough that I pretty much win fairly easily on turn three, because if they don't have the answer on turn three, or if they don't have the Walking Ballista and are able to kill my creatures before I pump, I win. That's effectively all I have to worry about. So sitting off round 12, I'm now 8-4, which was pretty good. I'm still on the bubble. I then go into a Dredge matchup, and I should win Dredge. Honestly should. He won game one, I won game two. Going into game three, I didn't draw any of my sideboard, and that's the real issue against Dredge, even as long as the game went, because he had to mulligan down to five, but he also had a Dark Blast in hand, and he was just dredging that back consistently and hitting my creatures before I can do much. So that was the issue. He ultimately knocked me out round 13 when it shouldn't have been a knockout for me. It's one of the more favorable matchups. I think I should have like a 60-40 percentage on that, and it should have been one of the ones I won. But since it went to three, I felt okay about it. So at this point, I'm just playing for pro points, and I'm just playing for the experience in day two. The immediate next matchup I play against after the Dredge is a Jeskai control deck, and just as before, I lose that 1-2. Almost the same problems as the previous Jeskai control deck. I'm getting burned out, I'm getting tempoed out, and so it wasn't the best of situations, so I lost another match. That drops me down quite a bit ranking-wise, and so now, but I'm just, at this point, playing for fun. If I win the next match, maybe I might get a pro point, maybe I won't, it all depends. The next matchup I play is something that I didn't expect to see in the slightest, and that is a Red Goblins deck. We're talking Legion Loyalists, Goblin Guide, going into all the 2-drop Goblins, going into Bushwhacker, going into Relentless Bushwhacker, going into Goblin Chieftain, so on and so forth. And everything that's not a Goblin is an efficient burn spell. So you're looking at Lightning Bolt, you're looking at Searing Blaze, Searing Blood, so on and so forth. The matchup is a mixture of aggro and burn. I don't have the best of matchup against burn. Against goblins, I have a fairly decent matchup. Ended up going to game 3, and I was going to win the next turn, but he ended up top decking a bushwhacker, and he already had a bushwhacker in hand. So I was only able to animate one of my Ink Moth Nexuses to kind of save it. If he didn't draw a double bushwhacker, I had him, but he had just enough damage with the double bushwhacker to kill me. So I didn't unfortunately win that, and my record was 8-7 for the day, and I ended up with 24 points at GP Oklahoma, which is why I got ranked 298th out of a total of 1,400 players in the main event. So if you do the math, that's roughly like in the top 20% of players. So if I'm comparing that to grades, that's a grade B, so I'm above average. I'll take it. I don't mind that for my first day 2 event. But like I said before, I'm shooting for a higher ranking. I'm shooting for those pro points. I'm shooting for the payday in day 2. I'm shooting for making my first video appearance. I'm shooting for making my first top 8 appearance. That's what I'm shooting for. And then eventually top 4 appearance, eventually top 2 appearance. And finally, I want to win a GP in that order. And now that I've taken the first step and I know what to do and I know it's possible, I'm becoming more confident in what I want to do. And so I'll make less play mistakes. And I'll slowly work my way towards everything, which I'm happy to do. As mentioned before, I feel like I had an overall great time, especially with my first day 2. There were some play mistakes I think I made, and I could have done better, obviously looking back on it. But overall, I felt fairly strong about the decisions that led me to get to day 2. There are 3 matchups, of course, that I think I should have won. I should have won the Dredge matchup. I should have won the Mono White Tempered Steel matchup. Of course, by the way, this was what kind of had me going, oh, that's kind of cool slash cute, was game 1, they go Saram's Expertise, put out 3 servos, use the extra part of it to play Tempered Steel, and now their servos are 3/3s, plus whatever else they have on the field at that given time. And so I thought, oh, that's clever, cute, and mildly annoying. But that's just a side note. And then, of course, I think I should have won the Goblin Burn matchup. Of course, it's a 50-50 split because of the amount of burn they were running, but I think it should have been a matchup that I won and I died to a top deck. Of course, that's going to be where you're going to sit most of the time. You're going to die to a top deck or something along those lines, but I think if you're able to make it out and not die to a top deck, that's going to be where you're going to make the best plays. That's going to be where you're going to feel the most comfortable, I think. So instead of going over a top 8 deck tech, I'm sure most of everyone has gotten a chance to have a look at the top 8 deck tech right now. I kind of want to go over my deck tech for my Infect list. So of course I want to start out with the lands like I normally do. I was running 2 Pendlehaven, 2 Forests, 4 Botanical Sanctum, 4 Ink Moth Nexus, 4 Misty Rainforest, and 4 Breeding Pool. Now, a lot of the Infect lists online, especially if you go to MTG Top 8, they elect to run more fetches than I do. And I don't think that's correct. Yes, you're using the fetches to fuel Dredge, and you're using fetches to fuel landfall things, but I structured my deck to not do that. With the fast lands, I felt a bit better not taking 2 damage to the dome, especially against burn. I felt it was also the saving grace when I needed to have it be the saving grace against, say, Grixis Control when I did my grinders, or against other things that saved me life. And then, of course, the fast lands are going to come to play untapped beyond turn 3. I just play something else. But I felt as though the fast lands did work. Now, would I try the 7 fetch version of this, or would I try the 8 fetch version of this in some cases? I think I'd be willing to, but it would have to be a non-burn heavy meta for this. That's the main reason why I played the fast lens, because I felt as though I was going to see a lot of burn, and I did. Over the course of 3 days, I probably saw 4 or 5 burn decks, and played against said 4 or 5 burn decks. Only lost to 1 because of the fast lens, thankfully. Moving on into the creatures, it was a standard creature package for Infect. So I'm running 4 Noble Hierarchs, 4 Glistener Elves, 4 Blighted Agent, 2 Jace Friends Prodigy, and 1 Viridian Corruptor. Now, The Jace, Friends, Prodigy are there as kind of a substitute for Probe. Yes, we lost Probe and the deck lost a lot of power by losing Probe. But since I have Jace, Friends, Prodigy now, I'm able to flashback stuff from the graveyard when I need it. I'm able to dig for more cards if I need them. He makes a heck of a blocker, and then if he flips, he is an alternate win condition in the fact that I can now mill my opponent out, and I did win two matches because of that. The player had me locked down, and I was able to flip Jace, cast a bunch of spells because I wasn't able to swing, and mill them to death. He also makes a great just general nuisance because his plus one is now going to make their creatures a lot weaker. And that's something I actually kind of enjoy, is knowing that I'm not going to take nearly as much damage on the crackback. If I have to win with Jace, I will, but I prefer obviously to win with infect creatures, or if I have to win with Noble Hierarchs, I will. I did end up swinging with Jace, ironically enough, on a couple of occasions, and I think it's probably the first time in MTG history that Jace actually did damage and became Gideon. I think at one point he did 10 damage for me, and that's, you know, obviously a panic button mode when you're not drawing your infect creatures, and they're at fairly low life, so you need to do something in order to maintain your status. And so Jace ultimately did work out for me one game as well as a Jace beat stick. Moving on to the instants and sorceries, it's again pretty standard for the deck. I'm running 4 Vines of Vastwood, 4 Blossoming Defense, 4 Might of Old Croza, 4 Mutagenic Growth, 3 Groundswell, 2 Distortion Strike, 2 Dismember, and 2 Become Immense. Distortion Strikes are there because I want to get through their creatures without having to lose damage to their creatures, and that's kind of why I prefer Distortion Strike over Rancor. Rancor is great for Trample, but if I just want to go through their creatures with Unblockable, it's there for that purpose, and it makes it so they take the full damage, which I'm more than excited to do. Obviously, I'm running 2 Become Immense because I'm not running nearly as many fetches to fuel Become Immense, and so instead of being a 3 of in the deck, it's just a 2 of. I'm fine with that. And Dismember's just there to get rid of nuisance creatures, Tassigers, Gormaug Anglers. I'll use it on Eidolon of the Rhetoric or Eidolon of the Great Revel if I have to. And those, again, that's a kind of a panic button situation where I'm taking 6 or taking 4 to deal with this creature that's slowing me down heavily. It's one of those situations that I'm not going to do it unless I'm about to win because I need that life. But when I do it, you're going to die. I would argue that Dispel might have been stronger main, or maybe Spell Pierce stronger main in some occasions, but I am happy to have the Dismember. So, touching on my sideboard, I want to kind of hint at why I went with this sideboard package, per se. So, the start of my 15 cards, of course, I want to touch on, the first of which is Ceremonious Rejection. The reason why I have Ceremonious Rejection in there, it's great against any Tron matchup, it's great against Affinity, it's great against all the Eldrazi matchups, doesn't matter if it's Ban Eldrazi or Tron Eldrazi, it's just great in dealing with colorless creatures. It's also great against Lantern Control. Yes, it's a 2 of in the sideboard, but it's one of those situations where you want to see it and hit what cards you don't want to see against you. In particular, I bring Ceremonious Rejection in against, say, any deck that would have Chalice, or any deck that's just got a lot of colorless stuff, again, going back to Tron, Lantern Control, stuff like that. That's why that card is in there. I'm running a 3 of Spell Pierce. This, again, helps me deal with Grixis Control, Jeskai Control, Blue-White Control, or any deck that's running just an exuberant amount of non-creature spells. I have it in there against Grixis Control because they don't have a lot of lands for one, and it's just a great way to deal with Kolaghan's Command, Fatal Push, or any of the early removal spells that I normally wouldn't want to hit my creatures. Now they're countered instead, or now they have to pay 2 more and waste whatever they're going to do next turn to kill this creature. I have a backup creature in hand, or I have a backup creature on the field, and now they're going to die. The same thing could be said for Jeskai Control, Blue-White Control, or again, whatever deck I need to bring the Spell Pierces in for. I will say Spell Pierce makes a great answer to Liliana of the Veil, Liliana of the Last Hope, Gideon of the Trials. All 3 of those cards, when they tap out on turn 3 and then cast this card, I Spell Pierce it. Now they're tapped out on turn 3. Now my creature lives and they die. That's a great reason why I had Spell Pierce in the sideboard. Moving on, I had 2 Nature's Claim. Again, that's Tron Affinity, Lantern Control. Most Cord and Coco decks, surprisingly enough, and I'll explain my reasoning on this, they're running Solemnity as kind of like a backup for Vizier. And Solemnity, if you read the card, completely shuts down Infect. So then I'm solely relying on Noble Hierarchs, or I'm solely relying on Jace, Friends, Prodigy to win the game, because obviously now I can't win with Infect. So against those decks, the Nature's Claims come in, at least as a one of, maybe a two of, against the core decks, just to deal with Solemnity. Again, it also deals with like major artifacts and other enchantments I can't deal with, but it's there again as a panic button. I ran a two of, and this is where a lot of people might be slightly confused, but as a two of, I ran Wild Defiance. Now, I chose to run Wild Defiance over Spellskite for a couple of reasons. Spellskite can be path, Wild Defiance can't. Wild Defiance is also fantastic in the Death and Taxes matchup, because now if they have a Thalia on the field and I can't kill the Thalia, now my spells effectively do what the cost of one spell would do. Example is, let's say they have a Thalia out on the field and I already have Wild Defiance out on the field. I have, let's just say for argument's sake, a Blighted Agent as well. I can now go Might of Old Krosa. This gets pumped +7/+7. I swing for 7, potentially win the game right then and there. It gets past Thalia, it gets past whatever it needs to, and I'm still holding up mana should they try to answer my Blighted Agent. I really enjoy Wild Defiance. It may not be the best of answers, but it does well against the Burn matchup, it does well against the Death and Taxes matchup, and it does really well against the Jeskai Control matchup, because everything in their deck is now a Burn spell aside from Path to Exile. That is the one thing that really is hard for me to answer. So with Wild Defiance on the field, now I don't have to answer their burn spells. Yes, they're coming at my face, but I no longer have to worry about them coming at my creatures because they're just going to pump my creatures. And I don't mind that. And that's the main reason why I was able to go against these Jeskai Control decks and take at least one game against these Jeskai Control decks, was because Wild Defiance. Moving on, I was running one Viridian Corruptor inside, and with the Viridian Corruptor in the main, against Eldrazi Tron, if they lay Chalice and they go Chalice on one just blindly, most of my deck's pretty much done. So the one Viridian Corruptor main was just a 3-drop way of dealing with Chalice, at least game one, and giving me a chance to recover off the Chalice. I was running an additional Viridian Corruptor in the side. Should Chalice come up, it gives me another way to answer Chalice. It also gives me another way to answer Ensnaring Bridge or answer any other artifact that I may have trouble with. It also gives me another infect creature in the long run should they decide to go Surgical Extraction Glistener Elf, Surgical Extraction Blighted Agent, Surgical Extraction Ink Moth Nexus, so it gives me another way to potentially win with infect. I'm using two of Grafdigger's Cage inside. Again, it's great against Dredge. It's great against Jeskai Control for the Snapcaster Mages that they run. Grixis Control, the same exact reason, just stop Snapcaster Mages. And the Cord and Coco decks, again, it's going to stop Cord from pulling out creatures. It's going to stop anything that, you know, if they have sacrifice effects, now those creatures are going to stay in the grave, and I don't have to worry about them. I decided to also use, and this might be a little controversial, but I decided to use two Sorceress Spyglass. Now, the reason I'm using Sorceress Spyglass is mainly because it dodges Chalice on one. Not going to lie. But at that same token, it does so much for me. It's going to stop. If you're not familiar with Sorcerer's Spyglass, by the way, it's a Pithy Needle for 2. Plus, I get to look at my opponent's hand, which is a slight benefit. It's almost like Probe in a way. But back to the reason why it's really good. It's going to stop all Planeswalkers that I find hurtful. Liliana's, Gideon's, whatever wants to kill me. It's going to stop Walking Ballista. It's going to stop Oblivion Stone, Celestial Colonnade. You know, any other various reform of activated abilities. It just stops on 2. It'll stop Engineered Explosives if I wanted to. It'll stop whatever. And that's the benefit of this card. Even if it's on turn 2, it makes for a fantastic sideboard. So long as Chalice is in Modern, this card I think will see play. Once Chalice leaves Modern, then I might have reason to play Pithy Needle again. But until Chalice leaves, it's one of those situations where I'd rather have this than go Chalice 1, not be able to Pithy Needle, whatever is going to be a threat to me. And then suddenly, now I'm stuck with this dead card in hand. The final card in my 15-card sideboard was pretty standard. It was a Hercule's Recall. Again, mass artifact removal does wonders. It's going to stop Affinity, Lantern Control, whatever else uses artifacts at that given time. At that same token, it is not the best option. I felt as though I was very prepared for artifacts, and so maybe this slot could have been better used for, say, Dispel. Maybe the Nature's Claims could have gone in for Dispel. There's other room for stuff that I wasn't particularly looking at. And so, ultimately, I think sideboard variations are what caused me to go 8-7. Or maybe it's just bad luck. Who knows? But there's just stuff you gotta tinker with. And once you tinker with it and you get a better idea of what you want in your sideboard and what your bad matchups are, that your overall game becomes better. And I'm happy taking my first day two, as I mentioned. Would I play Infect again in my next GP? Who knows, to be honest. From my next modern GP, it could be up in the air. I think the next modern one's in Albuquerque, ironically enough. And I could go to Albuquerque for a modern GP. I know quite a bit of people in Albuquerque. I know quite a few people in El Paso. And we usually make that our annual trip is in Albuquerque. So it's quite possible I might go. It's also quite possible that I'm going to go to GP Houston when that pops up and have a great time there and maybe do some modern side events with this exact deck list. Only time will tell how things will go in the future. And I'm excited for this next year, partially because 2017 was crap, and I think we can all agree on that one. But outside of that, I'm really looking forward to this next year in my Magic the Gathering career. I know I'll make day two again, and I'm shooting for that money bracket. This day two has given me the extra boost I've needed to make it, and I know I'm going to make it. I know I have that drive. I know I'm a good player. I know I can learn from my play mistakes, and ultimately that is what you need to do as a player. You need to look at your play mistakes. You need to go to your past, not bury it per se, but learn from them. And I think with this experience with Infect, I've learned from my mistakes. Maybe I'll play a different deck in the next GP for Modern. Maybe I'll play something similar to Infect. Or maybe I'll bring back Infect. Who knows? For all we know, the next set after Dominaria is going to be New Phyrexia, and we're going to get Infect back in Standard again. Which, if it does happen, it's going to be insane. But that aside, I'm looking forward to the next year of Magic. I'm hoping you guys are as well. Again, if you want to keep up with me, I'm on Twitter, at MTG Eternities. You could also find me on YouTube by the same name, MTG Eternities, MTG Eternities. I'm looking forward to you guys following me for the next year, keeping up with me. Hopefully we can grow together as a community, and hopefully we can grow together as players. Finally, I wish you guys all a happy holidays, or even if you don't celebrate the holidays, I hope you just have a great time with family or a great time with friends, and may the start of your next year be a good one. So just remember, all lines of thought are open for all Magic Seekers. This is your host from MTG Eternities, signing out.